Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here, getting you primed for today's show. Real quick, if you aren't already, follow the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. I am on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at CWM Rights Pod, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Coming up on today's show, first is Trevor Magnani. We're going into some very, very, very early 2020 draft prep, talking about the college basketball teams you're going to want to watch this year. It's obviously the guys where some of the big prospects are, but we're going to be talking about these guys the whole season. Trevor's going to be doing his big boards with Jackson Frank over at the Step Back. You can find the first one up now in the show notes. And then secondly, you will be able to read a bunch of Trevor's draft writing if you're the sort recently just kind of lined up what he's going to be doing for this year. And I'm very, very excited about the big boards he's going to do, about some of the prospect breakdowns he's going to be doing for us with the Cavs-specific draft lens on. And then after Trevor, you're going to hear me talk to one David Rommel, the host of Locked On Heat, talking about what's going on with the Heat this year in the Jimmy Butler era. Didn't talk really about Dion Waiters, which, you know, a travesty for me and me only, but didn't want to spend a lot of time on something that doesn't have a lot of value at this point. But again, find Trevor on Twitter at Illegal Screens. David is on Twitter at DRamil13. You'll have some links again in the show notes below of stuff you should read today regarding the Cavs, regarding the stuff going on with the teams they're playing up in the coming days. Going to start doing that more and more in the show notes. But without further ado, here is today's show.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Trevor, let's dive into this. We have four teams we're going to talk about, why they're watchable, why they're teams, if you're thinking about the NBA draft, that you should be watching. I'd also say you should watch some EuroLeague if you just want to look at the big boards for next year. A guy that I particularly love for the Cavs plays for Maccabi Tel Aviv over in Israel, so I would find a way to watch at least his highlights a little bit. There are sure some other international guys that we will talk about as you and I kind of go through this, but Trevor, give me your top team that you just say, okay, you're going to watch the draft, you're going to pay attention this year. Who's someone that you should, that people should really just be paying attention to here?
I think the best team to watch is probably going to be North Carolina, just because they're probably going to have the number one pick in this coming draft in Cole Anthony. So I think that if you're going to watch nobody else this season, just like last year, if you were going to watch nobody else, you could watch Duke and probably be fine with a good assessment there. North Carolina is another one where they've got the probable number one pick. They've got another player in Garrison Brooks, who is probably going to go on kind of the edge of the first round, and then potentially a third player in Armando Bacot, who should factor into the draft, maybe not this year, but at some point. So they've got a lot of talent, and I think they're going to be a team that you're going to want to watch around the number one pick.
So how do you, when you think about North Carolina and you think about sort of what we've seen from them in terms of actually churning out one and done types, does that, and certainly the Cavs' specific needs maybe impact this a little bit, I would say, but when you think about North Carolina and them actually churning out guys that are going to be one and done, that we sort of expect to be one and done, and I think Cole Anthony is that, obviously, is, do they have a success rate of like actually bringing the best out of a guy like that?
You know, they're a team that has kind of shied away from that in recent years. I mean, obviously they had Nasir Little last season. They had Kobe White. So they had a couple guys do it last year. But prior to that, I mean, the only guy who really did the one and done route for them was a guy, I believe Ed Davis was their last one and done before this. They've had Harrison Barnes. He stayed for 2 years. They've had other guys get drafted, like John Henson and Tyler Zeller. A lot of Cavs in North Carolina's really? Draft history, it looks like. But I think that they are a team where it's hard to kind of do the thing that we do with Duke, that we do with Kentucky, even that we do with a school like Arizona, where, you know, we've been through this before with them and we can kind of project out how that one and done player is going to be used and how we might be able to project them to the next level. I think Anthony, both because of his talent level and because North Carolina really is kind of on that second tier of teams who do the one and done, I would put them in comparison with like UCLA, with like Michigan State, where teams that are elite in college basketball but don't really necessarily rely on that year in and year out to be successful. I think that that makes it a little bit challenging to answer that question, because regardless of what school he went to, Cole Anthony was probably going to be the number one pick this coming season. And I think that it's hard to really like make any assumptions based on how Coby White and Nasir Little played last year on how Anthony's progression is going to go, because he is at just an entire different level than the rest of the guys that they've had go one and done recently.
For the Cavs in particular, he's another 6'3 guard. I would, you know, I don't think you can ever turn down need, but I do like what we're seeing from that backcourt so far. I think Garland has certainly been a little different than advertised, which I think can make me more optimistic about that pairing going forward. I think Sexton's been pretty good so far to start this season. But when you think about Cole Anthony as a potential Cavs target, which is sort of the crux, obviously, of what we're talking about here, is he someone that's like on your short list of guys right now that you're like, that guy makes a lot of sense for the Cavs, or no?
Yeah, I think he is, because I think the talent level is such that Colin Sexton and Darius Garland also, I think that he's not even on the level of the type of player that Anthony projects to be. If you can get a guy like Cole Anthony, it does not matter what else you have around him when it comes to kind of how you should value your other young players, because he matters more than the other guys that you have. I mean, it's kind of like the Sixers taking three centers in a row during the process, but Joel Embiid was always going to be the one who, out of those three guys, mattered more than the rest of them. And it didn't really necessarily matter that they had the other guys, because you can move guys, you can create the space for that guy to succeed if he actually has that talent level. And I think that if the Cavs end up with the number one pick again, I think that they Anthony needs to be a consideration. And if you're taking him, you're probably saying goodbye to Colin Sexton. And you're probably trying to move Darius Garland for maybe future picks or a player who fits a little bit better for them.
All right. Give me your next team on your teams that are your must watch list.
Well, I said that Duke last year was the team that, needed to watch, and you would be fine if you had to pick one team. There's still a team that I think you're going to have to pay attention to this year. They are not going to be as good as they have been the past few years in terms of NBA talent, but there are still three guys that I would have in my top 40 on that team. Probably a fourth that I would put in my top like 45 to 50. So they're a team that you have to talk about here too.
Duke is really interesting to me, because I think obviously like it just no matter was always going to feel like a top 10, like a dropped off, because you don't have Zion. You don't have like the Zion factor this year. But if the Cavs, for whatever reason, like do fall like a little bit later into the lottery, I think there are guys that like could just kind of make a fit sense point. Like, I don't know, you know, the lottery odds are what they are. We don't quite know where exactly the Cavs are going to be. I don't think they're like really going to be like a playoff team like they would be if this season ended today. But I think the guys, like, tell me if you disagree with this, but like when I look at some of the boards, some of the guys that I'm seeing consensus wise, like Wendell Moore, Matthew Hurt, are guys that like if you're picking the later half of the lottery, I can very much get with those kind of picks.
Yeah, those are the two guys that I would be targeting if I was the Cavs in the back half of the lottery. Matthew Hurt, I think, is a really nice transition player from moving on from Kevin Love, whenever that ends up happening, just because they have very similar skill sets. Hurt is a very competent offensive creator, a guy that at 6'10 is going to be able to create a little bit from the elbow, is a pretty good passer, good decision maker, can put the ball on the floor, and also provides that spot up threat that you need to have if you're going to be kind of this offense focused four. Also, I think he has a kind of a shockingly good defensive ceiling. He obviously hasn't shown that in the two games so far at Duke, particularly the Kansas game. He was pretty bad on the defensive end, but I think this is a guy who has a lot of different skills who would fit alongside what the Cavs want to do offensively. And I think that he would be a nice player to kind of be the next waiting in the wings whenever they decide to make a change from Kevin Love Whether that's him leaving at the end of his contract, whether that's the trade that people have been clamoring for 6 years, whatever ends up happening with him. And then Moore, I think he's just a really valuable defensive wing. I think if they somehow are ending up picking like 13th, 14th, that's the type of player that you want to grab in that range. There's a lot of good wings in this class. We'll talk about a couple more here with some of the other teams that we'll discuss. But I think that looking at him, that is a pretty good that's a pretty good player who can play defense, who can switch across multiple positions, which is going to be valuable if they're going to be looking at wings with this backcourt. I think both those guys have a pretty good potential to be in range, to be pretty nice targets for Cleveland.
One of the things I will say about that kind of seeking out that kind of player and just kind of what the Cavs are sort of seem to be doing, and I think Hurt's certainly a prospect a little bit of a higher caliber than the guys I'm going to mention, but you look at Tyler Cook, you look at Dean Wade, who shouts to Dean Wade for just like putting up monster numbers in his first G League game. They seem to be preparing for having that kind of guy in their pipeline. It's notable to me that they went to, and obviously they have a lot of guards, you know, they have Porter Jr. and they have Dylan Windler and they have these wings and like Jetty that they're sort of committed to. Or at least they really like and are just starting out with in terms of the two rookies. But the guys that they've attributed, they put on two-way deals are two kind of 6 and 4s, different skill sets, not exactly the same guy, but sort of would fill that kind of positional need if/when Kevin Love is no longer a Cavalier. I find that notable, and I wonder if that makes me think, like, if they, no matter who, where they kind of pick, depending on who they really like, if that's the kind of position we're going to see them target next year, or at least a guy that can give you, unlock a little more versatility so Jetty doesn't have to be the guy playing the four all the time.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I will say is it is a bit of a shame that if they end up being more successful than we kind of are expecting at this point, that they are going to end up losing that pick, because you look at the 10 to 20 range in this class, the guys that I have there, there's not only Wendell Moore, there are a lot of those guys who maybe are a little bit raw on the offensive end, but look like they're going to be pretty solid defenders at kind of all of the positions up above the three, that could really take some pressure off of Chetty or be a very good defensive fit with what they have going on. Looking at guys like Amar Silla, who plays in Belgium, looking at Precious Achiuwa at Memphis, there are quite a few guys in this class who I think would make pretty good defensive wing prospects for them to be able to put on this team. And if that's something that they're going to try to value, I think that they are going to potentially miss out on that type of player. And maybe that's a point towards them trying to gain an extra first later in the draft when it comes to the trade deadline, because that type of player is going to be there.
Okay. So next team on your list is who?
We'll talk about the team that I think is probably going to be the number one team for most of the year. They, to me, have the most talent in terms of just being functional at winning college basketball games of any team this season. That's Michigan State, led by Cassius Winston, who is probably not going to be a first round prospect and definitely is not going to be on the Cavs radar at the point guard position. But there are two guys I really want to touch on here with them that I think both could be risers throughout the draft process and make a lot of sense for the Cavs. That's their center Xavier Tillman and small forward Aaron Henry. Both guys that I would probably put in my 20s at this point, but I could definitely see growing up to the lottery level, particularly Henry, if he is going to look as good defensively as he has so far this season through two games.
So looking at boards, I know a lot of these guys are not guys that are like your top five to something pick and top seven pick or somewhere where we sort of think the Cavs are likely to pick. When you think about this overall draft class, and I think that maybe these guys are a good way for us to just kind of understand this, is this a draft class? And again, this is so early. We're doing this to just get ahead of this a little bit. College basketball is really just getting going. I'm giving listeners, I think, a chance, and myself, a chance to kind of follow along with some guys. Is this a draft class? And when do you like it in the 20 to 45 range? Like, are there guys that when you look past the star guys and some of the guys that are sort of late lottery picks to mid first round picks, are there guys in that next group of, is that next crop of player good in your mind? Is that an intriguing group of talent there at all?
Absolutely. I think this is going to be a very good class outside of maybe like the 5 to 14 range, where I don't love the depth of it compared to some other years. Like 2018 is the gold standard in terms of that back half of the top 10 being just a ton of quality guys. But this class, I don't think is necessarily going to be like that, especially from a Cavs perspective, because, you know, they've taken 2 point guards in a row, and I think 6 point guards projected in my top 12 players. Great job, guys. But I think that this class is really representative of the differences between draft scouts and draft writers who really understand how guys are going to fit into the NBA game, and draft scouts and draft writers who are focused on gleaning off of trusting recruiting rankings and leaning on athleticism and kind of the traditional ways to evaluate players, because there is a big split in kind of how some of the guys that I have at the top of my board are rated versus how some of the guys that are at the top of other boards are rated. Where when you look at, you know, the Draft Express guys, when you look at Sports Illustrated, you look at the big sites, you're going to see names like Isaiah Stewart, James Wiseman, Vernon Carey, you'll still see up there for some reason, Josh Green at Arizona. All those guys are really good athletes, but it's hard to really project where they're going to fit in terms of making an impact at the NBA level. Whereas, you know, you'll see our board, which is going to come out sometime this week in the step back, and you'll see guys like Trey Mann of Florida, or Oscar Tshiebwe of West Virginia, guys who have very clearly defined NBA roles and skill sets that I think are going to project well to long-term development. And you won't see those guys in the top 30 at the mainstream sites. And I think that is going to make kind of that middle no man's land between like maybe the 20th pick and like the 35th pick. That's going to make that a really deep area, because some of those guys are going to get recognized. Some of them will get moved up, but some of them aren't. And some of them are going to be stuck kind of in that range. And you're going to run into a situation where, you know, you may be picking like 2 years ago, you may be picking at the spot where John Collins went in the 2017 draft, and suddenly luck into a player that is as good as John Collins has been because of the way that things are kind of being valued and the ways the players are being ranked and evaluated by everybody. So I think that's something to keep in mind when you think about that question. Is this is a year where there is a big disparity between who came into the year rated very highly and who looks like they're going to come out of the year rated really highly. And that could potentially mean that we're going to have a lot of sleepers at that end of that first round.
All right. Give me your last team on the guys you're most excited to watch, the last group kind of our fourth team here.
I think I would go with Florida, because I think they're going to have quite a few second round options who I think will make sense if the Cavs end up getting into that second round. We talked about Trey Mann a little bit earlier, who's their point guard, who will probably be somewhere in the first round. Scotty Lewis at a forward position, probably also going to. But two really interesting guys who I think would make sense for the Cavs to look at. Andrew Nembhard, who potentially could fill the role that they're trying to force Jordan Clarkson into this year, as a guy who's 6'5", has a lot of point guard skills, but also looks like he's going to be able to play off the ball a little bit. And potentially, if the Cavs want to stick with this super small ball thing that looks like it's by necessity at this point, but could end up being just something that Bayline wants to experiment with down the line, he could be a player who could fill that role potentially really nicely in a way that a lot of other players at this level can't. And then also they have Kerry Blackshear, who was one of the best defensive players in the country last year at Virginia Tech, transferred as a grad transfer. Now he's at Florida. He's going to be the backbone of their defense. Just one of those guys that's a second round player, is really old, but potentially could come in and be kind of like an Eric Paschal type for the Warriors, where, you know, he's coming right at in right away as, say, like the 43rd pick in the draft, and he's making an impact from day one. Maybe he doesn't have a high ceiling, but for a couple years is going to be a rotation player right off the bat. So two guys from the second round, in addition to kind of their main guys, Mann and Lewis, who I think are going to help make both Florida a national title contender and also make teams pretty good with whoever ends up grabbing them maybe early in the second round.
When you look at Trevor, at just what you, if you're the Cavs, and obviously we have a long way to go, we need to sort of evaluate Garland more, KPJ more. We need to evaluate Dylan Windler once he actually gets on the court. We need to see what's going to go on with Colin Sexton a little bit more. We're in a position where we sort of know at least a rough outline of what the roster is going to be. For you, when you think about what you need, do you think the Cavs actually have versus sort of the guys you're highest on in this draft in different ranges? Are the positions, and just say what they are, I guess, for you in your mind, that what the Cavs need, are those things readily available in the 2020 class?
I think they are. I think it's just going to be a matter of, are the Cavs in a spot where it makes sense to take those guys? The big one that I would point to right away is finding that player who can kind of bridge playing the three and the four and can kind of captain being that guy who shifts up a position when they go small. So far through 2 years, that's been put a lot on Jetty. That looks like something that they're going to try to throw Dylan Windler at. Guys who are not necessarily well equipped for that position. And I think there are a few guys, we've talked about several of them throughout today, Hurt, Achiuwa, Silla. I think Denny Avdija, who you mentioned at the beginning of this, I think that those are all guys that I think could end up being very good fits for what this team needs on the wing next to the guys that they already have. Because they've got three wings that they're banking on developing from here. And those are all kind of offense-focused guys. They need that defense-focused guy that I think can cover a lot of gaps and kind of play maybe more as like a complimentary player on offense and then kind of fill those gaps. And I think there are those guys at the top of the draft. The other thing that I think they could end up having a problem finding would be that third big behind Love and Thompson. I think we've talked about it a lot, how, you know, their Larry Nance, I think, isn't quite the guy that you want playing as a five, as a backup in those situations. Ante Zizic is obviously either hurt and or bad throughout most of his career. So I think that kind of his run on this team is probably close to over. I think they really need a guy who can play the five behind Tristan Thompson and provide some value there. And I think that there are those guys, but I think that they're going to be kind of out of range to pick a guy like Tshiebwe, like Isaiah Stewart, who would be really comfortable in that type of role. So I see them having a harder time finding that. But I definitely think if they're picking it where it seems like they're going to be picking, which is probably that 5, 6, 7 range, there are going to be a couple guys for them to take shots at, whether that's Hurt, whether that's Avdija, whether that's Isaac Okoro of Auburn, who, spoiler alert for the rest of this year, there's my Jarrett Culver for this class. I think that there are plenty of guys who are going to be really solid fitting in next to the wings that they already have that they could pick in that position.
I will say that I read Okoro's bio and his skill set, and I was like, Trevor probably loves this guy.
Yeah, he's the smartest defensive wings prospect from the last two drafts, and that includes Matisse Thybulle. Like, he diagnoses plays better than anybody in college basketball on the wing, and I think that it is a complete travesty that he was ranked like 35th in ESPN's recruiting rankings. This is a top 10 player in this class.
Trevor, last thing, just from what you've seen from the two young guys from the Cavs, anything stand out to you, either good or bad?
Well, I think that it really looks like Garland is kind of getting the process over results thing right now. I think that he's looked really good at times, but his numbers have definitely not shown through in that way. I think that, like our friends at the Chase Down have kind of repeatedly hammered over their last few episodes, he needs to develop that pull-up game that was his go-to.
Absolutely.
And his senior skill at Vanderbilt, and he just has not used that at all. And when you're that thin
until he gets that strength, he needs that pull-up to be working, and we just haven't seen it yet. So I want to see a little bit more of him from like the 19 to 21 foot range, just to kind of make defenses respect that a little more. But overall, very encouraged by what I've seen from him. Kevin Porter, you know, he is kind of what I expected. He looks really good for 7-8 minute stretches, but is he ever going to be the type of player who can command more than like 16 minutes a game? Because he's just so inconsistent. I really have reservations on kind of what his upper level ceiling is going to be and whether he's really going to be ever much more than he is right now for this team. But I think that so far, you know, Garland has kind of met expectations. Sexton has exceeded expectations. I think that he's looked a little better than I expected.
Been awesome. Coming into
this year. Looks like he has not regressed at all. Which is great. That was my big fear, was that he was doing a Josh Jackson and having a really great March and April, and then was going to come out in November and be November Colin Sexton from last year. And then Porter, you know, it's too early to tell really what he's going to be, but I still have the same reservations with him that I did before.
Yeah, two things I'll say to, as just as a note on that, what you're saying there. Number one, only 31% of Garland shots are three-pointers. That's 41 compared to 41% at the mid-range and 20% at the rim. So he's doing a lot of work there. It's just kind of like a comfort zone for him right now. I agree. Just what would like to see him launch some threes. We know he has the range. It's what kind of got the Cavs to draft him and fall in love with him in the first place. And then for KPJ, I will say this. There are stuff that he does that you clearly see that he needs just some refinement. But then you have like those spurts, like he had the point burst against was it on Sunday? It's against the Knicks. Can't even remember what game it was. Yeah, it was the Knicks game where he just like looked really good, and then the game before that he looked really good. And his instincts, particularly in defense, are better than I would have thought.
Yeah, I think so. I think that he's done a good. I think that he's been pretty solid there, but again, it's a spurts thing. I think that's a little bit more defensible on the defensive side of the ball to kind of have spurts rather than consistency at this point. But he has always been a spurts player. He has always been a player who his good stuff all comes at once, and then it's interspersed between long periods of less than optimal play. So it's a question of whether or not that's going to continue. Is kind of my major hang up there. And just going back to Garland, you know, I was talking, he has worked a lot about out of the mid range, but it's a lot of floaters for him at this point.
Yes.
And what I'm talking about more is kind of like that Damian Lillard type shot where, you know, he gets a couple steps away from the pick as he's going around the screen and then just pulls up before the guy that's going over the screen has time to be able to react and the big can kind of recognize and make that decision what's going on. That is the shot that really made him impressive at Vanderbilt, and he just doesn't have it yet at the NBA level. He's taking too many steps in and kind of really getting into that no man's land, and I think that that's where he needs to improve. So that, sorry about the confusion with that. That's kind of what I was talking about specifically, rather than kind of him falling in love with these floaters that are not high percentage shots.
No, I think you're right. And I didn't mean to. I think that was just kind of my addendum, is like the mid-range shot for him is the floater. And it's also like the lanes for Cavs guards to drive right now aren't particularly clear. The paint's a little tight, and I wonder like how they could kind of loosen that up a little bit aside. I mean, Kevin's really doing a lot of work on the outside to be the only spacer. So like, you know, we'll kind of see. Like he's kind of the one guy in that regard that's actually there, like spacing the floor. But you can find Trevor on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Trevor, as always, thanks so much for coming on Locked On Cavs to talk about the draft.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. During Thanksgiving week, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, congrats. You've got an extra holiday spending money. If you lose, congratulations to you as well. MyBookie will give you all of your money back. It's a no-brainer because you literally cannot lose. It's no risk, all gravy. It doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer. MyBookie welcomes all the come play, so quit waiting around and sign up today. Just log on to mybookie.ag, make your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll. And that's on top of that risk-free bet. If you want to start betting on sports but have a lot of questions, don't sweat it. MyBookie's patient customer service team can walk you through the process. And the best part is, if you join this Thanksgiving week, you'll have one last shot to take advantage of their incredible sign-up offer. Again, so log on to MyBookie.ag, make your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. They're going to match your first deposit dollar for dollar and jumpstart your bankroll. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and a risk-free bet for Thanksgiving only. So if you're a true football fan, you do not want to let this opportunity pass you by. You simply can't lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train, get in the action with MyBookie using the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You pay, you win, you get paid. Cut from here. Okay, I basically just want to talk about just what the Heat have been like in the Jimmy Butler era. And I just want to get into that, really.
Okay.
That's just what you know me, my gut tells me let's talk about Deion Waiters getting fed gummies for 10 minutes, but like that's not going to give our listeners or my listeners good content. So let's just get into Jimmy Butler.
All right.
3, 2, 1, cut here. 25 seconds. Okay. Joining me now, David Ramil, host of Locked On Heat, also writes at places like Forbes. David, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. Looking forward to a good matchup on Thursday.
You know, so are you surprised that you're saying that? Like the Cavs, are, you know, I don't think are quite on the level of the Heat, but are you surprised that like you can, I think, honestly, fairly say that the Cavs are a little more of an interesting opponent for most teams on a given night right now, based on just what we've seen from them so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I don't think anybody really had very high expectations for that team, but at the same time, you know, they've managed to do a pretty good job so far in the season. And obviously, it's a long road up ahead, but at the same time, they're fun. They're good to watch. They should be interesting. They should provide a challenge, especially since Miami has to travel with Cleveland. So I'm looking forward to seeing how the two teams match up.
What has, for you, covering this Heat team, covering the first year Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero comes in, Kendrick Nunn comes in, what has just this season been like for Miami in this kind of adjusted version of what we've sort of known them to be post-LeBron?
I think it's been actually a lot better to watch than I would have expected. I had high hopes for the team when they first assembled this roster, that there would be a lot of playmaking ability across the board. This roster is, with the exception, obviously, that they traded away Hassan Whiteside, that clears up so much on this roster. And there's so much playmaking ability from everybody there. But, you know, Jimmy Butler has been a far better teammate than I would have expected. I didn't really buy into the talk that he was a locker room cancer or a problem or any of the hyperbole that's followed him around throughout his career. But at the same time, just seeing him interact with the players, interact with everybody in the media and things of that sort, he's actually been a very positive influence in that locker room. And he just has them playing at a very high committed level. Like everybody is working hard, everybody's committed to a team success, and it's been fun to watch, to be honest with you. So this team has been very, very good. I'm not so sure if their, you know, if their record reflects where they'll be at the end of the season, but at the same time, I think you could probably look ahead and say that they might be a team that could compete for home court advantage in the playoffs.
So they're currently 7-3, have just beaten the Detroit Pistons, currently, I believe, second in the Eastern Conference as we're recording this on November 13th. What David, are their actual strengths? What are just the things that this team is really hanging its hat on it in the start so far?
It's playmaking for the most part on offense. So their three-point shooting has dwindled a little bit, but at the same, you know, they're still, like, I think, top four in the league overall as far as their three-point shooting is concerned. But they're able to make a lot of plays for one another, and that's the strength of their offense. Right now, even without Justice Winslow, who I'm not sure will be in the lineup on Thursday night as we're recording this, you know, they haven't really lost a step. He's expected to be their top playmaker, their point guard by de facto, you know, but it's fallen on Jimmy, and he's been doing a phenomenal job. He had 13 assists on Tuesday night, and he's done a really, really good job overall as far as making plays for others. He's kind of taken a step back, kind of a very, very light version of LeBron in the sense that he's not fully engaged and aggressive as far as scoring is concerned. He's good enough where he can take a step back and say, you know what, I can make plays for others. I can get everybody else involved, and then kind of just pick and choose my spots about when to go to the, you know, when to try to be a little bit more aggressive getting to the rim. And I'll more often than not, if he doesn't finish the shot, he'll draw a foul and get to the line. So he's been really, really good at that aspect. Defensively, they've been very, very good at keeping teams from shooting the ball well, particularly from the perimeter. They give up a lot more two-pointers, but as far as the three-point shot is concerned, they run everybody off the line, and there's constant movement on defense. Obviously, Bam Adebayo is versatile enough at the center position, or power forward, I guess, but that he's actually playing. But either way, he's a versatile enough big where he can run guys off the line, and they do a really good job as far as the team defense is concerned, and very active as far as steals is concerned. Jimmy, obviously, being the top steals hitter for the team, but either way, they still do a really, really good job. Active hands, always trying to make things difficult for ball handlers, and it's paid off.
The other thing here that I think is really interesting about this team is that they are, as I look at this right now, fourth in defensive rating, behind Jazz number one, Lakers two, Magic three, the Heat four. Is the Heat's defense, in your mind, is that like an accurate reflection of how good this defense actually is?
I my tendency is to think that maybe it's overstating it a little bit, because I feel like at some point there will be a little bit of a regression here. I just don't think they can keep up that kind of defensive intensity throughout the whole course of the season. There are some struggles out there with Myers Leonard at the center position, and Kelly Olynyk hasn't been great either as the main backup. I still think that with Justice involved, maybe if he was in the lineup a little bit more, maybe he'd be able to make a positive impact. But overall, maybe I'd say they're pretty good defensively. I just don't know that they're this good defensively. I don't think they'll be able to maintain this over the course of the whole season.
What to you is the matchup or matchups you're most looking forward to seeing on Thursday? For me, I'm really excited to see how the Cavs guards do against the Heat guards. I think, you know, Kendrick Nunn's been really good. I want to see how the Heat kind of approach defending guys like Garland and Sexton, who's been really good. I think the main matchup, though, is just kind of seeing these front courts interact. I think in particular, I just want to see as much Bam on Tristan Thompson action as possible. I think both those guys are super active. Tristan's been unreal this year. I love Bam, which isn't like a hipster take. That's just like Bam is really good. Those are kind of the two big areas for me, and I don't really know. You know, Jimmy, I think, is going to be in a really good position to have a big game against the Cavs, but they have a big weakness. It's wing defense. Butler can definitely exploit that. Tristan and Bam, to me, again, should be a lot of fun. What are you looking forward to?
That seems to be the interesting one. I wonder if I'll actually start off guarding Tristan, though, because as active a body as he is, I wonder if it's possible that maybe they don't want to have Bam and foul trouble. Something Eric Spoelstra has been doing a lot of this season is starting off games with Bam guarding the lesser of the front court players. Either, you know, in the case of Los Angeles, Bam was starting, he started to guard JaVale McGee, and then Myers Leonard was picking up Anthony Davis, and then that kind of moved around over the course of the 48 minutes. But I wonder if maybe to avoid foul trouble, I mean, I could see the matchup between Bam and Tristan being a pretty physical one that could lead to some unnecessary foul trouble for either player. But from Spoelstra's perspective, obviously, he's trying to protect Bam from picking up those kind of unnecessary fouls. So I wonder if they hide Bam a little bit, at least in the short term for the first quarter or so, maybe on Love, and then kind of see what Myers can do as far as limiting what Tristan Thompson does and keeping him off the glass a little bit, although that seems like an unlikely matchup. So that's absolutely what I'm looking forward to. Where do you see that playing out? Because I'm curious for your take. Obviously, Tristan playing at a near all-star level, right? So maybe the best year of his career. So, I mean, he would certainly merit some defensive intensity there from Bam, but I'm not sure if maybe that's a good matchup to start the game.
Yeah, I kind of hope we do see it, just because I think, well, I would like to see Bam defend Love, because I think Love hasn't had the blistering start that Tristan's had, but he's been pretty good. He's going to do a lot more work on the perimeter. He's taking like way more threes than he is twos right now. His post-ups are not super frequent in terms of how often he's taking them and how often he's doing them. So there's that limitation there. I wonder if, you know, you would know better than me if Bam is going to be, if the Heat's defensive system is comfortable with him kind of being on the perimeter as much as he might if he's falling around Love. But I think that would be fun too. I think Tristan definitely is going to be guarding Bam, because I think the best place to hide Love would be on Myers Leonard, I think.
Yeah, no, and Bam doesn't really require much as far as defending is concerned. He's not really aggressive in looking for his shot. But he is very good at making plays for others from the high post. And then, of course, around the rim, if there's a missed shot, there's a good chance, much like Tristan, that he'll corral that rebound and be able to put it back with ease. So, it should be very interesting. Yeah, I could see Bam kind of starting off on Love and then kind of playing a little bit of a rover and maybe moving around a little bit defensively and shifting on to some other players there. So that should be a really fun match.
If there is, last thing here, if there is one weakness in this Miami team or one kind of thing you would say people should look for on Thursday to see if it unfolds, you know, in the Cavs' favor instead of the Heat, what is it?
It's the reliance on the three-point shot, obviously. If that shot isn't falling, it just seems like the rest of their offense kind of just falls apart. And I know you could probably say that about a lot of teams, especially this early in the season, but they seem more reliant on it than most teams. And they've had some really good success there. Obviously, Goran Dragic, just a sixth man, has been blistering from three-point range. Myers Leonard is leading the league in three-point percentage. All these things are great. But Tyler Hero, Kendrick Dunn, as rookies, their numbers kind of are up and down, and so they're a little inconsistent. Duncan Robinson, too, who's getting more minutes than he ever has throughout his career. All these guys, if their shot's not falling, they're kind of just liabilities out there, and so that's a problematic thing for Miami is where do they get the bulk of their offense if these guys aren't able to connect on these shots that they've been hitting pretty regularly over the course of the season.
You can find David on Twitter at DRamil13. Go check out Locked On Heat. He does a great job over there covering the Miami Heat, who are a very interesting team, to our credit, we didn't talk about a certain former Cav on today's episode. We're just going to leave it at that. But read his writing as well at Forbes. David, thank you so much for coming on and chatting about the Heat.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.